All right, folks. Howdy. Oh, sorry, David. I kind of jumped the gun when Dave was taking a sip there.
No, I'm here.
Hey, patrons. Episode 51, post game.
Happy to
Deuces.
be here, man.
Yeah, I'm excited.
And look at this,
And
y'all.
I'm excited to settle back in and take some voicemails in a little bit because we kind of just, oh, look at that. We got
We got a spiffy new graphic at the bottom. There's the number if you haven't seen it before. 1-940-289-7234. I think it's something clever to go with
That
that.
is a that's a Texas-based number. I chose that specifically just because just felt appropriate.
Well, also, I've been joking with Matt. The GOP here is like trying to pass all these like laws about censorship. That if a company or like a social media company is censoring you because you're based in Texas, which again is like not happening, but like it's like their kind of fantasy that like the Silicon Valley could be like no more Texas, like I don't know, Twitter accounts or something like that, like they can shut it down. So yeah, we're concentrating everything here so we could use that one day.
Well,
Because I
thank
think it'd be
God.
really funny actually if we use like this conservative like weapon to come at YouTube.
So before we get to I we also need to get to Sarah Palin. Also, this is a little bit no, I won't talk about it. We'll talk about it later. I'll tell you off air. Anyways. Fine, I'll say it. I want to talk about it honestly. It's to do with COVID. I am a long COVID sufferer. Now, it's not luckily it's probably one of the mildest types of long COVID you had. If you have eczema, if you have mild eczema or something like that, after you had I had Omicron, a massive outbreak of what my dermatologist told me was a different kind of eczema that's triggered by viruses, which it can happen from a flu and that sort of stuff too. But I've had flus and coronavirus and never something like this. And I guess just have to lotion myself for 4 to 6 weeks. And just something you like just to point out when people are downplaying, I think, the severity of even Omicron. Like, look, I am somebody who is optimistic, hopefully, about just what Omicron means versus Delta. But there's a big but is like, hopefully, that's where the story ends, right? We don't get some other weird variant after this. And also, it's who knows what other symptoms like this are. I'm a 30-year-old guy, right? Like, I feel lucky that this is all that my lot is because I don't really give a shit. Like, I was at the dermatologist and he's like, how much does this like affect you? And I'm like, well, I mean, it's kind of itchy, but he's like, how much does this affect your quality of life? Like, because for some people, eczema is personal, right? It doesn't look great. I don't give a shit really. So for me, like, I'm fine. Like, I got a new kind of like thing to rub on it, with my healthcare, thankfully. And it's nice. And it's actually the first time I've treated any kind of eczema, which is a good thing about when you finally get a employer healthcare.
Yeah,
And
absolutely.
but yeah, I just think like the idea that this is just some sort of cold now, is frustrating to me because like you don't know, first of all, that like it's even when Rogan says like just for healthy people, I think like people are right to point up the extremely callous, brutal implications of not giving a fuck if like a 30-year-old has asthma, right? But even healthy people have shit that it affects you. It's something that downplaying it, I just don't see as a as an avenue towards anything positive.
Man, I'm sorry that you're getting these side effects, man. I
Yeah,
still feel pretty lucky to have missed it so far.
I'm and I'm the only one. Well, me and my girlfriend, my family in North Dakota have avoided it mostly. Extended family haven't. But that's a different story. But like my parents and my brother and their little one and his family haven't. So you don't want it. You like. People say there's like the Crowder thing where we're going to have Omicron parties. Like, you don't want it. And if you and it, you don't want it definitely now, right? Like when the hospitals are fucking slammed. So, that's my 2 cents there.
I feel like I got it back in February 2020. I think I got it before it happened, but
And I do too, having had it definitely once. There was a weird thing where I This was like early on, and me and my brother had the same thing. He visited the Christmas before coronavirus, and he went home, and we both had the problem where we couldn't tell if we were having this weird bronchial respiratory issue, mm-hmm. Or if it was just our stoner lungs. This is a post game, but like, yes. And I, looking back on it, it's like that wasn't super different than honestly what I experienced.
I mean, I was in bed for like 5 days exhausted, so who knows?
Oh shit, yes. Yeah. That, I think, what else would it have been?
But it was before it had hit yet. I don't know. It would have been a little while.
Yeah, but I think it like, maybe, who knows? This is just us speculating probably, you know, in ways that we need to trust the experts to get to the bottom of this in scientifically approved ways. It seems like it might have been bubbling around a little bit before it really started. Who knows?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, who knows? I mean, again, you know. Yeah, I mean, I'm just surprised I haven't been hit this time. I'm not trying to attempt it.
Yeah, no.
I have had my 3 shots, so maybe they're doing their job here.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. No, I mean, sorry. I know, plenty of people have been suffering those long-term effects, and it truly is a shame. We do have somebody who seems like they're not too worried about it, though, right?
Yes. So,
the queen of freedom.
Yeah. And, you know, look, I also, in the privacy of my home and interpersonally, I understand, like, like Barry Weiss did that thing on Bill Maher, which is like, I'm done with COVID. Like, I understand a certain kind of sentiment. I've actually, like, I'm ready to start planning, like, vacations and stuff like that. I understand it. But as far as like a messaging thing, I think it's just absurd and silly, childish, but not as silly and childish as Sarah Palin, who's in New York, suing the New York Times for something. I can't remember what it is. I honestly don't care enough to know. I hope they fight it out. Ultimately, I hope Sarah Palin doesn't strike a win, a win against free speech, with the New York Times. But anyway, she's in New York for this trial, but it had to be postponed because she tested positive for COVID 2 days ago. And now it turns out that she is going around New York City in restaurants. You know, just look, I understand. Again, I'm not even going to do the thing about Omicron. Like, you take it fucking seriously. Even if this whole thing about Fauci saying like it's 5 days against 10 days, like, don't go to restaurants. But anyway, here's Sarah Palin. It's just funny to watch her.
You
know what?
She's outside, though, isn't she?
I was just going to say that. I'm already off of this. She's outside. There's nothing here. Sorry, folks.
I don't know.
I don't think this is fine. Well, I mean, you shouldn't go if you have COVID. Well, I guess I will say that. Like, you got
COVID. Does she have COVID?
She does. That is the more important thing. Okay, we have two things to balance here. But I think that it definitely outweighs it that she literally just tested positive for COVID 2 days ago. Now, if she tested negative, then I think eating outside is fine. But who knows if she tests? I guess that's the thing. But looking at that, I think a lot of people don't know New York outdoor dining. Is this a thing in Austin?
Dude, I'm going to tell you right now that you're talking like from a complete foreign country. Like,
yeah, okay.
You know, we had the wave and like people started wearing masks again, like occasionally inside. Like, that's about it. No, I haven't seen anything like that in a long time.
And, you know, it is very difficult to spread outdoors, if not like borderline impossible. And so I think.
I just remember that. And that was a really big shift for me, though, in trying to push back against people who were like, I don't know, being really over the top, because there's definitely a group of people who is really enjoying, you know, being shamers. And I remember early on in the pandemic when it was like hardcore lockdown and people were like gathering outside in parks and stuff. And everybody was like, how dare you? And like, you know, coming at them. It's like, looking back now, that was probably one of the best things that people could have been doing.
Right. And there wasn't spread from those.
No.
Like the George Floyd protests and stuff because of the outdoor thing.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think understanding those bits are important. I mean, like, I don't know. Palin, I always, it's funny. I was thinking before this, like, I was wondering where she's been, because it feels like she's fallen off a little bit. I'll never forget nor forgive. I mean, like, I'm a big, Hank Williams Jr. has horrendous politics, but look, I like Hank Williams Jr.'s music, and he has this great song, Family Tradition. And I'll just never really forgive him for what he did to his own song. You know, so it's a great, you know, it's a great song that, you know, people play before country concerts because people like add like these little bits in between the lines of it. Like, why do you drink to get drunk? You know, blah, blah. Anyways, this is a great song. And he changed the lyrics of the song Family Tradition to be McCain Palin Tradition. And it is probably one of the worst assaults on music ever. Just like really like forced shit. And I don't know, whenever I think of Sarah Palin, all I think about is how Hank Williams Jr. just completely ruined one of his like all time bops by making it about Sarah Palin and John McCain of all people.
Yeah. Well, that reminds me, Kid Rock has a new song.
Oh God.
And I think we should maybe listen to it. I don't think Miss. Well, yeah, I don't know if we'll get in trouble for copyright in this.
I mean, it's post game. I mean, they'll just take it away. Worst case scenario.
Who cares? So here is a consequence.
Just like of teasing them out, the moderators.
Kid Rock back. Here we go. Is this it? It's a weird video player. What the fuck am I? Okay, top that's 10 not arcade that's an ad. I was gonna songs, say that was a, I should have known that was just
an that's ad. An ad for you. Are you a big Arcade Fire guy?
I'm not a big Arcade Fire guy. I did see them in Hyde Park in London, and it was a great show.
I don't really know them. Here we go.
They're okay.
I'm just saying somebody there's somebody in that band that people say I sort of look like, which is
oh weird. Yes, actually, you do definitely look like Wynn, the frontman, 100%. If all we need to do is get you like some, you know, like those really twee fashion guys. I don't know, like a guy that's like in a folk. Like if you kid it out like that, I'd be hard to, you know, tell the difference, I think, between both of you. Okay, here is
hell yeah.
This is Kid Rock. I think this is the Brandon song. I hope it is.
Hell yeah, bro.
We the people, and all we do reserve the right to scream fuck you. Wear your mask, take your pills. Now a whole generation's mentally.
Streets in trouble. Oh yeah.
But COVID's fuck, near. Fuck. It's coming to town. We gotta act quick. Shut our borders down. Joe Biden does the media embraces. Big Don does it. And
it's funny because like there's lines like we gotta shut the borders down. It's like is Kid Rock taking a stand against Title 42? Like what?
I mean, Kid Rock is too early in his career to just go full. Like react like to only be doing political like right-wing political music. I mean, you gotta wait till you hit at least 60 to start doing that shit.
I mean, how old is he? I should look that up.
Call him racist.
This is pretty bad. He's 51 years old. He's early. He's 9 years early.
Okay, that's probably enough.
Oh, let's this is actually Brandon. Pretty awesome though. I just typed, I'll share this with you. I just typed in Kid Rock, check how old he is, but the press coverage of his new hit Bob is pretty funny to me. Kid Rock releases Let's Go Brandon song bashing Biden and Dr. Fauci. Fox News, Kid Rock releases politically charged single We the People that slams Joe Biden. I mean, it's just so funny because you know that like the guys who are consuming this now probably hated Kid Rock 15 years ago because he was doing too much cultural, like, you know, merging.
Yeah. Like, Ba with the Ba. Actually, I thought that song hit when I first heard it. And then you realize that he's standing on, like, a trailer, and you look at, just Google Kid Rock childhood home. And he lived on a fucking, like, Michigan, like, I mean, a sprawling tennis court.
Rich kid. Rich kid, yeah. For sure.
His dad owned a, like, I think a car dealership or something like that.
I gotta tell you, I mean, I hate to be such a kind of, I don't know, just Southern boy about this, but when it comes to like country stuff, like, you gotta do a lot to make me be interested in your music if you're not from the South. Like, Colter Wall is an exception to that. I'm just saying, like, I never had a Kid Rock. Like, it was never interesting to me. And, like, I will, like, shamefully admit that there was a period in high school that I listened to a little bit of the country rap stuff, which is pretty bad. It's, like, really, like, I don't want to talk about the content. It's, like, the music is just bad, right? So, like, I definitely could have gotten into it, but I was like, no, I'm not going to listen to a guy from Michigan that's not country. Anyways, I just wanted to say that I at first found the Let's Go Brandon thing funny. I thought that whole thing was, like, pretty ridiculous, actually. It just immediately, though, lost its swagger, right? It like immediately lost like being a little bit of a funny joke because, I don't know, like, you do realize a lot of people who are saying it like are actually afraid of saying fuck.
Yes, that's the funny thing about Kid Rock song is like, we reserve the right to scream fuck you. It's like, yeah, you have the right, just say.
And now you're just saying it in code. And again, thing in that, like, it really gets people worked up. People have probably seen this. This is Dan Crenshaw getting heckled because he like snaps at this young girl here.
Because he's caught. Video.
What?
He's caught. I think it's because he's caught.
He's caught, and I'll just so people know, in an interview, Dan Crenshaw said that like there's something in the American spirit where we resonate with characters like Superman and Jesus Christ, and then he said, and even real people too. Right. And for people who might not catch that, you know, that's basically saying that Jesus is a fiction character.
Yeah. He was trying to get Jordan Peterson with his archetypes and lumped Jesus with Superman. And a Christian's not a big fan of that.
So I'm going to play this. And there's something very specific, though, that I want to know because people have probably seen this, but I like it a lot.
Whoa. Yeah.
The most important thing here is that we have hero archetypes that we look up to. Jesus is a hero archetype. Superman is a hero archetype. Real characters, too. I could name 1,000. Rosa Parks, Ronald Reagan, end quote. I can't wrap my head around this.
Well, I'll help you. Put a period out of the word Jesus and don't question my faith.
Wow.
Way to go, guy. You moron.
What?
Yeah, you don't
talk to
a kid like
that.
Yeah,
boom. Don't question my faith.
Oh, okay.
You guys can ask questions about all of these things, and I will answer them. But don't question my faith.
I can question your faith if this is what you said.
That's... I mean, you can read the quote again. But nowhere in that quote am I saying Jesus is not real. That's a ridiculous statement.
He's the Son of God.
Of course he's the Son of God. Of course he's the Son of God, and of course he's real.
You can't say two different things. You can say that on a podcast, and you can say this here.
On the podcast, nobody would have understood it that way. I think you're twisting it that way.
Come on.
Which is not very Christian. Which is not very Christian.
Let's go, Brandon!
Let's go, Brandon!
It's not.
So that's the bit that I wanted to know, right? Like... I love the very confused Let's Go Brandon's in the crowd at the end, right? It's like a Pokemon. You know how like they express themselves just by like saying their name? They're like, Let's Go Brandon?
I had not listened that far.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Let's Go Brandon.
I mean, you can just hear it's like as like people's brains are just like slowly seeping out of their ears. Just Let's Go Brandon. It's too bad. Again, I'm not somebody who's ever been offended by it. I'm just now at the point because fuck Joe Biden. But also, I'm just noting that it has now moved on from actually even being a sort of interesting or clever or sort of funny statement about how the media is like willing to like lie about what people are saying. It is now just like a very sad, pathetic cry of very confused folks. Who are just using it as like to fill space.
I mean, look, those guys, their instincts are right. He is a Brandon in the same way Joe Biden is. Here's his, I mean, look, his father, Jim Crenshaw, is a petroleum engineer who worked abroad. And Crenshaw spent time growing up in Ecuador and Colombia, developing proficiency in Spanish. Not that there's anything wrong with that. After high school, he went to Tufts with a Bachelor of Arts in International Relations, and after military service, went to Harvard University's JFK School of Government. Like, he's complete, you know, establishment. So he is a Brandon. Let's go, Brandon, at Dan Crenshaw. That is, that's beautiful.
But he went to a fancy high school, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they took it out of his bio.
don't talk about his,
He's living in Katy, Texas. Yeah, anyway, I mean, Dan Crenshaw is a punk. You know, you can see in the way that he's talking to that young girl there. This is the thing that's so funny. I mean, you've made your bed, right? Like, he wants to be both. He wants to be two things, right? He wants to be accepted in the evangelical crowd.
He completely,
also super bass podcast boy, you know.
Yeah, he completely lost himself in that. I forget who that is. It like Jocko Willink? Is that the guy who's?
Oh, I can't remember.
Completely who lost himself on that interview, because he's talking like he's Jordan Peterson. Like, I mean, this is when you're separated from your base. Your base is those people who don't want to see you talk to a little girl like that when she's trying to say you don't believe in Jesus enough, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's tough to start talking about fucking archetypes and Superman, you know, to marry those two constituencies. Good luck.
Absolutely.
Maybe more Marvel trailers will do the trick.
I can't do any more fucking superhero shit.
Yeah, let's do some voicemails. Here is voicemail number. I forgot why this is annoying. Okay, yeah, I'm going to try this, and let me know if this is loud enough, David. It might not be. I might have to do it the other way.
This is Joe Snuffy. All right, so
this is the Joe Snuffy.
The right one?
Yep, I think so. Yeah.
This is Joe Snuffy. All right, so the DSA Labor Committee wants to try to convince some of to take jobs in the trades so that we can embed with the 6 trade unions in Rhode Island, and which are, aside from the Teamsters, are run by some very conservative people and are very embedded with the they're in bed with the political machines at stake. So they've asked me to speak at the general meeting tomorrow of becoming a welder after spending.
Joe wanted a different one, and I have that.
Hey, it's Edwin.
Right. We'll get to that Joe's next one later. We'll go to Edwin here.
Hey, it's Edwin calling from Boston. What's going on, David and Matt? One thing I wanted to ask for the post game: what do you think is the main defining part of capitalism? Because market economies have existed forever, but I was thinking about this, right? You know, as just broadly a leftist, and I think I don't think it's just the fact that currency exists and that people buy things that defines capitalism. It seems to be the fact that distribution and production is centered in the hands of a few people. So I just wanted to hear your thoughts on this, because it's something that I've been reading up on a little bit, and I kind of just wanted to hear your gut takes. Thanks. Good night. Left is best.
I go first, David. The historical view of this is to distinguish capitalism versus feudalism, say, is who's determining the economic priorities. Is it the king or is it the capitalists? So you have different bourgeois revolutions, English Civil War, the French Revolution, the American Revolution, where the capitalists are like, this is us now. We're going to basically determine, all this stuff. And I think that's basically it, right? Like, who's determining an economic priorities in the society?
I mean you might have to mute this.
Oh, me?
Yeah, because I played twice.
Oh, gotcha. Sorry. One second. Let me just turn that off.
I mean, I think the power analysis is solid. And I would also just add, I mean, to look at it historically, like, when does capitalism begin? I mean, it begins with these voyages that are going off into North and South America, the New World, right? Where people were investing in them up front for with an expectation on a return on the other side of it. So I would agree, Edwin's, you're 100% right saying that it's not just market or currency. That's a huge mistake, actually, that a lot of people fall into, especially like libertarians that try to make that argument. Where it's like, we've been doing this forever, right? No, capitalism is a very, very specific legal arrangement that allows people with capital to invest in the production, right, or the exploration, or like an adventure, right, and then on the other side have expectations for the proceeds of like that work and the you know, and the treasure and all the kind of things that they're pulling on the other side of it, right? That is the real beginning of the shift of the system, and of course it's completely predicated on a legal structure and a power structure, and that's, you know, that's you know, that's the law. These things were enforceable, you know, through contract and through the legal system of their respective countries. But like that really, like to think about it in that way, like that's the beginning of capitalism, is these people who, this is where the, you know, stock trading like begins. It's like making bets essentially on like your expectation that this shipping expedition is going to be successful. And then once that, you know, activity is completed, you getting paid back on the other side, right? With, you know, significant amounts of like profit. This is the beginning of this kind of capitalist accumulation. So, I mean, that is like the real defining break from, you know, previous, even just in like investment, you know, these kind of like, is very much tied to like this early period of kind of exploration and like colonialism. And then that sort of starts to develop and come into conflict.
And that coincided with, you know, the enclosures,
yes.
You know, domestically. Like, we're, instead of this land being something that everyone uses to, you know, hunt and, you know, get wood and to sustain themselves, mm-hmm. that's actually the Lord's now. Sorry. Right? Like, people assume, and I think it's one of the, like, things that I'm most fascinated at, a success of capitalism, is that it has basically created this idea that existed forever, that mm-hmm. these woods must have been owned by someone, you know, in fucking, you know, 3,000 years ago, right? And it's like, and you know, maybe God gave it to him or something, right? And it's not that way. I mean, obviously, yeah, like the dispossession of folks in Americas is just a that enclosure, like in hyperdrive. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's do another one here. I'll try to share this the better way.
Okay. My first time leaving a voicemail on any of y'all's shows. So, yeah, I just wanted to say real quick.
Let me go back in case we missed the name.
Hey, what's up, y'all? This is my first time leaving a voicemail on any of y'all's shows. So, yeah, I just wanted to say real quick, I appreciate y'all for everything y'all are doing. And also shout out to Matt for how he handled the debate with Jackson Hinkle. That guy is completely a bad faith, and you can see it from any of the debates he's had with any other you know, leftists or streamers or whatever. But yeah, anyways, take care, guys. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much. I don't know your name. One thing, we haven't done this long enough to institute a format, but if you can, say your name and where you're calling from when you leave these messages, folks. But thank you for that. Let's do another one.
Yeah, do you have anything you want to say about the debate today? I was telling Matt before, man, I put it on, I saw like 5 seconds, and I pressed the X button, and I was like just depressed. Like the process just makes me sort of sad these days.
Honestly. Yeah, no, I don't have a tremendous amount of a reaction to our Marxist-Leninist friend debating Sam.
No, I don't want to focus on it, but that's what I think gets me mad. It's like, yeah. You know, you need to at least be associated with a program and a party if you're going to start saying things like that about yourself, is my two cents. But
well,
let that be.
You're a shitlib, so sorry about that. Okay, so let's see. I've got a few more here. I need to figure out a new system because I open these in tabs, and then the tabs are inscrutable to me. Which one is which? But try this one here.
Hey, everyone. This is Paul from South Dakota, better known as Seb Gorka's Back Pain. I just wanted to say, it's been about half a year since I AM'd or Discord messaged you. And I was in a pretty dark place. I just wanted to let everyone know I'm doing much, much better. I'm in a much better place. And I just want to give some advice for the show. I think you guys should spend about an hour and a half on something that's known as Force the Vote. I think it would be general pleasant conversation, non-toxic, you know, no toxic bullshit. And just everyone would be productive and useful with their time with it. All right. Thanks. Bye.
Yeah, I think we have some of that classic South Dakota sarcasm coming from Paul there.
Yeah, no. I mean, I just love how like that tactic by those people has sort of been elevated into something like political. Like, I don't know, like anytime you see maybe a procedural move by somebody in parliament in another country or even in this country, they're like, oh my God, they're forcing the vote. Like, you know how like that.
Yes, yeah. Like leverage, the concept of leverage is forcing the vote.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
I would love to see. Look, I'll say it again.
They're going to show us. I think they're going to show us all. They're going to show me how to get things done. And I look forward to like the positive project. That
I'll say what I always say. I don't know why they have so much faith in the Democratic Party.
Well, you know, it's Marxist-Leninism. You don't understand it. Well, we need to, yeah, anyway.
Actually, on that, I have to suggest to people who might not follow my Twitter feed, Paul O'Connell has a really great piece out in Contour magazine on laborism, which is actually very applicable to the downfalls of laborism, in the sense of like being in the Labor Party, which I think is very applicable to the U.S. scene, too. I highly suggest people check that out.
He's due for a return. We should, we should get him back on. Oh, you want to do another voicemail?
Let's do one more, and then we can do some IAMs.
Here we go.
Strong McCallum, I got to say two things.
Oh, let me start.
Fritz, it's Strong McCallum. I got to say two things. Number one, the Tesla plant in Texas and the subsidies it has received is kind of reminiscent of the old deal for the BMW plant in South Carolina.
Right.
The deal for the Mercedes-Benz plant in Vance, Alabama. I just got to say I'm sick of seeing taxpayers finance the South State as a race to the bottom tool for high-value-added manufacturing labor. And, I think it's time we organize and educate the public on this and put an end to this crap. But point, I got to disagree with y'all humbly and agree with Dr. Peterson on one thing. None of these climate change models account for the flatulence from my neighbor's dog's bowel movement. So I got to say that. That's all. Thanks.
I mean, yeah, nice. There's an alarm going at the CERN because the scientists are like, Jesus, we're trying to do physics and we don't even know that climate means everything. And we haven't, we've been doing this, I guess, making castles in the sand.
They're just sitting behind a massive poster that says climate is everything, like in their halls.
These climate change types, I would love to not be a climate change type where like I actually don't think that there's going to be severe repercussions for humanity and the globe just generally for what we're doing to the atmosphere. I guess that's the identity that I'm, you know, thrown into the world with now.
Strom is 100% right though to note. I mean, it is horrible what's happened in South Carolina and you know across the South really with all these plants moving there. And I think one thing the left has to get better at is like expressing too to people that like our opposition is obviously not to like jobs and to potentially do manufacturing. It's one, you know, these being opportunities for just huge, in the case of BMW, you know, foreign corporations being able to come here and just sort of like rob, you know, our rob like the public purse. And then in the case of domestic companies like Tesla, you know, hyper exploit their workers. I saw this from my uncle the other day, and I should have screenshotted it, but, you know, I want to give him his privacy. But it was a kind of Facebook, you know, snapback against all these kind of whiny socialists and leftists. And it was I'll do it very quickly because actually I thought it was a very funny point. It was some guy shows up to a, you know, social gathering, driving a fancy car, and somebody's giving him a look and is like, well, how many people could have been fed by the amount of money that it costs to buy that car, right? And the guy goes on this, like, you know, parable about, well, I think that it helped out the people who built it and then the car dealership and, you know, basically going through all these people and the miners who, you know, who like produced the raw materials necessary, the people at the factory who built the car, the salesmen. I mean, I think we probably fed around 150, 200 people, right? And this whole kind of like, oh, well, look at what happens when I spend my money, how great that is. And then like the stupid socialists are just like, oh, you know, defeated by the logic of this brilliant man. And it's funny though, because one, it's goofy, of course, but you do realize that like, okay, well, in their mind, for the people who are like, wow, what a great point, they are completely missing at least the socialist critique of this process. Because you know what? I actually think that it is good for someone to be spending their money on a product, right? That is like people are working on and provides like opportunity. I actually think that is a great thing. The fact of like people buying things and being paid for their work is not the problem that I have. The problem I have is with the boss of the car factory who is taking all of the money on the top end from all of the work that these people are doing. And right, like again, like. Yeah. If you think that, and I will say there are a lot of kind of like idealist leftists who like don't get this, to be fair. But at least like the actual critique of this system is not that, oh, some guy bought a thing and then that created jobs and opportunities for folks. No, it's the people who are creating those things aren't getting the full value. If the person is buying a car for $90,000 from BMW or whatever, right? And that $90,000 of proceeds was going and being distributed on all the people who actually labored and worked on that car, I'd be all for it. The problem have is that the guys who are actually working on it are probably getting 5% of the value and 95% of it is going to the BMW corporation. Right.
Right. Yeah. It's not being anti-trade. It's like, who's getting compensated for that?
I don't know. I just like, it's so, I mean, I think this is also, it's like, this is sometimes important exercises to do though, to realize like, okay, well, all these guys who are on the right, who are like thinking this kind of way, they have this kind of like upside down argument of like what our position is in the first place. And I think some of it is willful and some of it is just ignorant.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, Jordan Peterson, the guy who skimmed the Communist Manifesto ahead of his, his debate about communism.
Do we have other sound or should we run some IMs?
Let's do some IMs.
I'm going to start from the bottom. Irish Liam says, a great show last week. Quick question. Do you find Jimmy Files, also known as James Sutton's, claims to be the most plausible account of the JFK assassination? I will pass that to you, Matt.
I'm not familiar with Jimmy Files, I don't think, or James Sutton. I've said that it's the, for me, the narrative that I subscribe to, it would be the one put out by the Death is Just Around the Corner podcast, you know, goes into a lot of that stuff. But I should look into that work, I guess. I've been kind of like out of it, to be honest. There was a while about 5 years ago where I got deep into JFK stuff. I just kind of like stepped back a little bit from the abyss. 'Cause you can like I've said this before too, but when Christmas was on the Racine, he said, like, you know, it's really hard to know, have any kind of definite idea of what happened, because it's fucking spies and it's fucking one of the most talked about events of all time, and there's intelligence agencies that are like invested in talking about it. I don't know, like it's
who in our network is really into it? Corey Pine.
Pine. I was talking to Corey Pine about the law firm Sullivan and Cromwell that I can't remember where that came up recently, but it is this old law firm that's involved in a lot of U.S. imperialism, financed Panama Canal, that sort of thing. But yeah, I haven't heard him talk about JFK specifically, but I'm sure he's, you know, good on
it. I just know that he would have an opinion one way or the other on it. I just say that because, again, like, I know this drives some people crazy. I know there's the big questions and controversy. I've never been interested enough to pay too much attention about it. But I was just thinking of someone we could do in the future. You know, Christopher Hitchens was a big critic of Oliver Stone's movie. And I think there might even be a debate with him, or at least with somebody who's sort of standing up for the Oliver Stone perspective. That could be a fun thing to get, like, Ben for the Hitchens angle. I don't know. This thing that could
interesting,
be
interesting. Yeah. Cause I mean,
also Alexander Coburn, is a big anti-Stone guy, I believe too, on that, at least on the, his.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say I haven't seen the new Stone stuff. I don't like the movie. Like, even after diving into the JFK stuff, I think it's weird. There's weird stuff and weird, like, I don't get, like, some of the New Orleans emphasis, to be honest. I think it's, but I want to check out the new stuff. And it is interesting because, like, that is, I don't remember Hitchens opining on the JFK assassination or what he thought, but I remember being annoyed by Chomsky when I was like 15 or so, because he was annoyed that people were asking him about it. He's like, said it was a waste of time. And I wasn't like, I was, you know, a little X-Files watching. X-Files has a great episode where it mixes it with the cigarette smoking man, that he's the guy who shot JFK and MLK. But the, like, context that they set around it is, I think, a pretty decent context for people understanding at least the alternative theory, as opposed to, like, lone gunmen shooting these guys. As opposed, it wasn't the guy who was, like, you know, controlling Fox Mulder. But, you know, the way that they talk about it, those episodes, people should go back and check them out.
No, that sounds great. I was just noticing, I think we'll just do a better job in the future. I think some people aren't able to get into the Discord. So I'm also going to read some YouTube chats too, because people are asking questions there. Let me see. Where did it go? The first one we had, and this is actually an interesting question. I don't have an answer to it. I don't know if you do, Matt. Vis-a-vis higher education student debt, how specialized job training been offloaded onto higher education and therefore workers? Is there a history of this? I think that's an interesting question. I will say that the way that, like, a liberal arts education even has been sort of treated as it needs to be, like a jobs training program instead of just like an education program, I think is a unfortunate representation of the way that college has sort of been pushed on people. Again, I think everybody should have the ability to go to four-year school, because it's actually a great thing, I think, as like a society, to provide to people the time to study and think and be around other students. And, you know, it's a very beneficial time in my life. But I think it gets actually a little perverted when it's like sort of treated as it's like, this is your 4 years of like job training. That would be my only response to that. But I think that's an interesting question that I would love to investigate more, you know, with people who follow this closer.
Yeah, I mean, like, something like coding seemed to be an interesting thing to follow with regards to that. But that's a good question.
And on YouTube questions, let me see.
Oh, somebody asked why Ostral McCallum asked, what has driven Matt to be a Charlotte Hornets fan? LaMelo Ball, answer number one. Miles Bridges, answer number two. Rozier, I think Rozier's still on the team. And yeah, I mean, they're really fun to watch. But LaMelo Ball, I'm a big fan of passing. That's my favorite. Like, if a player really excels at passing, that's one of my favorite reasons to, you know, check out a game. And LaMelo is supernatural, and he's super, super fun to watch. And I say that as a Timberwolves fan who has some rivalry with him, as the other good player from that draft is Anthony Edwards. And I would still prefer, frankly, to have Anthony Edwards than LaMelo, because I like a strong shooting guard. But LaMelo's great to watch.
Hell yeah. We have a great one here from I Am the Lobster Hierarchy. Thanks to your emphasis on history and finding your own Blair Mountain, I found a book called History of Utah Radicalism. Startling, socialistic, and decidedly revolutionary. It's been great so far, and I'm discovering things I had no idea about in Utah, and it gives a good overview of socialism in the United States as well. Well, I'll definitely put that on my reading list. I'd be very curious to hear what your thoughts about it once you finish the whole thing. I mean, I'll tell you, it's you'll always be surprised if you really take those deep dives. I mean, I was sending Matt some photographs. I was driving around Central Texas over the weekend. And I went to one of the meeting halls where the Farmers Alliance and these kind of radical early socialist groups in Texas were meeting, you know, in the late 1800s. And I don't know, gave you some sort of goosebumps. And you realize like how important those when reclaiming that history and like how important those kind of social structures were. Like literally, it was just like a big dance hall. That's where everyone in the community went, and that was why it was a great place to do radical organizing, because that's where everybody was on the weekend or at the end of the day.
I mean, I love to hear that story about finding your own Blair Mountain. I mean, I think have historical confidence, right? Mm. Like and I felt the same way about, there's a few books over there about the North Dakota sort of populist period. But the thing is you're never going to go back. I don't think. If you do, let me know. But you go back in history and find that, oh shit, Jordan Peterson, all these motherfuckers, they're right. It's not going to happen. There's a reason they're freaked out about like teaching, you know, things like racism, and there's like capitalism. A lot of those bills mentioned like communism. Mm-hmm. There's a reason they're afraid of that, and our side doesn't have to be afraid. So yeah, I love hearing that, because yes, everywhere you are, you got something like that.
No, for sure. We got agriculture news from Kowalski, and thanks, Kowalski. I got my Kowalski Family Farms t-shirt in the mail yesterday.
Oh, hell yeah.
Excited to rock that scene around town. But some random agriculture news. The Ukraine-Russia conflict could impact wheat production, which is not good given the drought pressures we are seeing all over the Western Hemisphere at the moment. We really have got to stop putting the food supply in jeopardy. Yeah. I mean, wouldn't it be the first time that a crisis in Ukraine caused a...
yeah, no shit.
You know, hunger, unfortunately. Yeah, that's worrying to hear. Thanks, Kowalski. Hendo also notes, thoughts on the 2026 World Cup. You're not a big soccer guy, Matt. But the United States, no. Mexico, and Canada are going to do a joint. Have been selected to do a joint bid for the World Cup in 2026. Should be the first time three countries have hosted. Was it 2002? Japan and Korea hosted together. Okay. But the three, yeah, U.S. and there's sort of, and now they're negotiating like what cities get what.
Yeah, do you have a general take on that? I got something.
Well, they have a longer question, so I want to read the rest of it. It goes the way you would expect. You'd imagine. Are you in favor of being held in North America? Usually World Cups cost an ungodly amount of money, but in the U.S., there are dozens of brand-new, absurdly expensive NFL stadiums all built and ready to go, so it probably won't end up being so expensive. You know, I mean, the World Cup is really rough, as, you know, the Olympics and all of those other kind of international sporting events go. I think that is an interesting point, though, that hopefully in the U.S. at least they're not going to have to build up new stadiums. And because it's going to be spread across three countries, you know, I think most of these stadiums are probably going to host like 1 to 2 games. But, you know, honestly, like, I can't imagine. I'll tell you right now that what happens to communities, even if they don't have to give a lot of taxpayer money to, you know, to building a new stadium, what ends up happening to communities is just horrible. You know, they clear out homeless encampments. You know, like, there are always going to be unfortunate consequences to this, which is such a shame. And I can't imagine being a positive experience, for example, in Mexico. I'll tell you, the solution, both in the Olympics and the World Cup, is simple on this, I think, is that they just build a place. Find it if you need to have an island or something, whatever. And it's like, this is where the World Cup will be every 4 years. And have it be a badass stadium somewhere and like just let it sit there instead of every 4 years bring it somewhere new and causing all this kind of crisis. It also sucks. I was thinking about this today, not to bore people with sports if you're not interested, but you know, you get an automatic qualification as a team if you host, as you know, you would expect.
Sure.
You know, the U.S. has struggled in in the most recent World Cup to qualify. I think that was a one-off experience, I will say. But I don't know how they're going to sort this with CONCACAF, which is the North American division of the World Cup. So like the world is divided into regions, right? So there's the UEFA European region, there's African region, there's Oceania, there's Asia, South America, North America, and each of them gets a specific amount of teams that get to go. Does that mean that there's only going to be one guaranteed spot for the rest of the countries in North America? Sort of seems a little shitty, honestly, because only 4 teams are able to get in now, I believe, from CONCACAF. So it sort of sucks. If you're like Panama or like Costa Rica or Honduras or something like that. Right. Like,
yeah, that does suck. Do you have a contender for where you would put the permanent FIFA?
No, someone smarter than me should figure that out. But I mean, I'm just saying, like, that makes just a lot more sense than doing this.
Well, I think like that's the thing is like with the Olympics. To me, that I feel the same way, and they should just keep it in Athens, right? It's fucking a Greek thing, if I'm not mistaken. And that seems perfect for it. But FIFA. That's a trickier one because there's not like, you know, that sort of historical, who are we going to give this to that sort of owns it thing. I aspire to the same resolution, but it is tough to think like who any contender for something like that. Cause I don't know, I guess Americans wouldn't give a shit if the Super Bowl was in like fucking Honolulu every year. So
yeah, I mean, that sounds like fun.
Yeah.
Well, no, I would give a shit, actually. I will say this. This is the only problem with hosting in one place is the time difference between Honolulu and the rest of us would be a pain in the ass. I would imagine this is one of the benefits of being, you know, an empire. I would imagine that they probably wouldn't host the World Cup somewhere that would mean 4 a.m. games for us here. But
that's convenient. Yeah, Brazil, they're basically the same time zone. You guys got it. Argentina. You can fight
for it. Let's see. And we have, how many more voicemails have we got?
We got at least one and maybe a couple more here. Okay. I'm looking.
Well, why don't I finish off the IMs and then we can do the voicemails. Reputed Lemon. What happened? Hey, Matt and David, wondering if you have any thoughts on the International Marxist Tendency, Socialist Revolution in the U.S. I've been working with the organization recently myself in Canada called Fight Back Here, but curious what, if any, thoughts y'all have on them. In a different period of time, if I was up to date on all this stuff, I might have a stronger bit for you on them. I'll tell you, I know Alan Woods, I interact with their work from time to time. Who is IMT, you know, it's Trotskyist. So like, you know what that is. They put out some pretty good political education work, at least intro to Marxism stuff. I can't speak to Canada. I'll just say my general thing is like, I'm not somebody who says, you know, only join the DSA, but I do find that to be probably the most promising organization in the U.S. I don't know the Canadian situation well enough to say. But yeah, I mean, Alan Woods, like I've used Alan Woods' stuff before as sort of intro, like intro Marxism, because like he has some really great like reading lists that he's put together. And I've listened to his talks and his writings. And I'm not saying I don't know his work well enough to like say, here's like a full throated endorsement. But knowing that he's a Trotskyist and knowing where I have my disagreements with that tendency, you know, I can enjoy the work from there. But
right.
You know, I think from what I remember, though, and I would have to be corrected from my UK friends, you know, there's like an entryist tendency there, which a lot of Trots have within them, you know, sort of like joining larger organizations with the, you know, the idea that you're going to sort of take them over. And as you can imagine, that can create a lot of enemies and frustration. But
I
don't know these things. Like, it's not clear enough in my head to like, you know, speak overtly about these things.
I saw an example, and I don't want to name the group because, you know, I've seen people in that group do good work with it, but it was like asking the DSA to do something.
It was a socialist alternative.
Like, yeah, it was. Yeah. It's like,
and they wanted the DSA. They wanted the DSA to take what their platform is, which is that you're not going to accept a salary above a certain kind of threshold, right? And the idea behind that is that you make sure that nobody is sort of falling into, you know, it's like the professionalization of your elected socialist representatives. You know, that's like the idea, right? Is that what happens is some people get into government and then they sort of are part of a different class, and you start to realize that, you know, as Leo Panitch, I think, said at one point, like, oh, that the members of the opposing party don't have little horns in their heads, and they actually might be really nice, and you might enjoy hanging out with them. And like, this is like what happens, though. It's like when you see a socialist party, you know, their leadership start to sort of stop being so combative. And while I think that's a very reasonable like kind of tension to have, the problem is that. It's a ridiculous handicap to put on the organization as a whole. Like if you as a politician want to do that, right? Then it you know, that's great. You put that, make that a part of your pitch to folks. But like if, for example, you're trying to get people to be DAs and they're a lawyer and they have, you know, law school debt and all that kind of stuff, and we want to be able to recruit candidates who can win elections, we want to tell them that, oh, you know, not only do you have the kind of rules and regulations that go with being a member of the DSA, right? But also, like, we're not going to endorse you unless you accept a salary of $60,000 a year versus, you know, the $150,000, $200,000 plus that you're making in private practice. You know, I'm just saying, like, this creates sort of like unnecessary hurdles, and that's why people were against it within the organization.
Yeah, sincerely.
I didn't think. I mean, I support Shaman. I support a lot of the SA folks, and I welcome them within that organization. But I thought that was off.
Yeah, it seems weird. We're gonna do a couple more. Messages.
We got one more. We got Spencer says from Utah says, do you guys know the band Volpec? If you're unfamiliar, check it out on Spotify. The band has a unique path to success. The music is good too. Also, who made the music for your intro? I don't know Volpec. The man who made our intro music is Matt's good friend Christoph Brun.
Yeah, Christoph Brun. He's currently in the band The Quarterback Club in Minneapolis. People can check them out. I have not seen Volpec, but they look like looks like something I might be interested in. It's interesting. There's a question of, you know, people ask on Google when it brings up, how did Volpec sell at MSG, which is impressive. Impressive. They sell out at MSG.
It sounds like fun. Yeah, I've never heard of them. No. Also, we should remember. We should try to like rotate some of our music too, because we have a few tracks from.
We do, yeah.
Christoph and people. I think I love it every second of it. People were noting that if they watch a lot of our show, that they're like they've listened to the intro music going for like 6 minutes a lot.
Right.
But we can get some voicemails.
Yeah, here we go.
Hey, Matt and Dave. Dave from Jamaica again. I guess I'm switching to a lighter topic. I've been noticing in the comedy world that I think conservatism has kind of killed comedy in a way, because as I observe it, you see, they don't even tell jokes anymore. It's more like they kind of whine about whatever grievance they have or people they don't like, and then the audience kind of claps in affirmation. Nobody's even laughing anymore. It's kind of a... It's a very weird thing, because I remember when I was younger, I used to see some kind of conservative comics. At least back then, they told jokes, but now it's just this weird type of almost podcasty type style of things. So what are your guys' thoughts on it? Has conservatism destroyed comedy? So see you guys. I'd like to see what you guys say about that.
I agree. I feel like it's a fixation for comedians, clearly. It's all over in specials. I think some comedians actually handle it well, even if you I forget the guy's name, but I've seen, you know, good takes on, you know, a rising censoriousness or puritanical response to comedy, which again, like what's funny to always to me is the conservative comics who says like, I'm done with the people who are like that, but they're not, right? Because they still come back to it over and over again. Instead of just doing jokes that they want to, that would offend people, right? Mm-hmm. Like nobody actually really wants to do those jokes. They want to complain about how they can't do them, but they could do them. They just ultimately, like, it's, I don't know. I think it's made Dave Chappelle less interesting for me to listen to. Like, I think he's a genius comedian, but like, I'm fucking not interested in hearing him talk about trans people anymore. Like, I don't need a lesson from him, a guidance on that topic from him for that. Right.
You know what show has been really good on this has been It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. I mean, just like extremely offensive. I mean, they do blackface at one point in that show. I will say some of their, I still like it. The past couple of seasons have been, I think, a little too self-aware in a way that, I don't know. That's just an artistic criticism, less than a political criticism of like, oh, we're doing the bad thing, but we get that it's bad and, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, the thing that was always funny is like, these are bad people. And it's funny that they were, you know. I always think that that's a lot more interesting for me in 2022 than a lot of the other, like, you know, envelope pushing stuff out there. I also think it was extremely dangerous to start talking about comedians like they are like our social philosophers.
Yes, absolutely. That's a big problem. We don't really have an understanding of what goes where in society, mm-hmm. and so we have like we have like comedians being like epidemiologists, and it's not great. It's not an optimal situation.
I want to throw this on the famous comedian of the right, Dennis Miller, who has been doing this for a long time. I remember, you know, when I was younger, seeing Dennis Miller on Fox News as well. I've not seen this.
I remember him from the football when they had him on Monday Night Football, which was fucking awful. and I had no idea what the fuck he was talking about.
He's a talent. I picked this one just because like Jeff Rainforth says Dennis Miller killer on Hannity and the libs can't handle it.
So here we go.
Let's see him kill it.
Been 3 years since 3 years since I've been on Fox, and things have changed over there. I noticed Donna Brazil sent over tonight's questions for me this afternoon, so they must have had some sort of shakeup over there. What I do today, I've been lying around all day, wasting away in Mitigationville. I've got a couple steaks over here marinated in some hydroxychloroquine. Going to knock back a couple azithromycin jello shooters later. And then I'm going to binge watch Aqualung Biden's blooper reel from this week. Now, I can't believe that people were endorsing this guy. I know he lost his fastball, but I've been watching him lately. I think he's lost his curve. I think he lost his slider. And I think he's wearing his cup as an N95 mask at this point. The guy should be in the guy should be in the back seat on a Sonic commercial.
That last one's all right. that last one's not bad. You got one. He got one in a minute. You give him that.
I'll give him the jock strap for an N95 mask. I don't really get it, like what point it makes, but about him being like geriatric or whatever, but yeah. people call me Dennis Miller. Three different people replied to me that this was Dennis Miller when I said that Jordan Peterson sounds like a Baudrillard bot going haywire. And it was like, Matt, this is Dennis Miller. I'm like, okay, fair enough.
No, I mean, Dennis Miller, I don't know. That's like the height of conservative comedy. Because like, there's conservatives, there are reactionaries who are like, it can be funny comics too. But there's something just terrible once you start saying that you're being like a Republican, GOP loving conservative comic. Like Tim Dillon has some shit that's really, really nasty. I'm not like a big fan of all the shit that he says, but like Tim Dillon has some bits that will, put me on the floor. Like that dude is hilarious. I don't know, a lot better than the Dennis Miller. I don't know, like the guys who just like, who they're trying to sort of pump up on us. As the spokespeople of, free speech. I don't know. It's the free speech warrior shit. This is exhausting.
Yeah. We got one more. I think this is the Joe Snuffy, correct one too. So we should get to this. Here we are.
All right. Trying this again. This is Joe Snuffy. So the Providence DSA Labor Committee wants to try and convince some of our members to take jobs in the trades so we can embed with the 6 trade unions in Rhode Island, which are currently run by some very conservative people who are aligned with the state party machine. And, we need to get them on side. So they asked me to speak at the general meeting tomorrow about my experience of becoming a welder after spending years earning a master's degree. COVID's what forced me to switch fields. But for anyone who's underemployed, bouncing between short-term, part-time jobs until they catch a break and get a decent job in their field of study, I say look for a trade job. Odds are people are hiring in the trades and many employers will pay for your training. And after a year of being a welder, I was able to buy a house and my wife is about to have our first kid. You'll always have your degree to fall back on later, and you will learn so much from sharing the same experiences of your coworkers. In the trades, no one cares what degrees you have. They just care what you can do, so prove you can work just as hard as anyone and use your education to be a resource to help your coworkers with their challenges. By entering the trades, we can push the existing unions left and re-radicalize the labor movement. So if you're underemployed already, then I say take up a trade job, do your part. All right. That's it. And keep up the good work. Bye.
You keep up the good work, Joe.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here, there's a lot of great opportunities to become an electrician. With all of these new, I'm saying like in Austin, Travis County area, and there's great union jobs that you can pursue. I think that's great advice. Great. I like it a lot.
I mean, I like to hear somebody following their own advice and having success like that too, like mazel tov on the new house and the kid.
Yeah. Congratulations, Joe. Well, I think that's what we got for tonight. Happy to hear from everybody. It's, I gotta say getting these phone lines working has been really nice. Sometime soon, hopefully we'll be able to make it live. But, in the meantime, this is great. This weekend, Sunday, we got conversation debunking those kind of nasty race-based IQ mythologies of the right wing and the very, very rational center. much, much more. See me next week for a Griscom stream on Tuesday. And as always, feel free to reach out with any questions, praise, impressions that you got out there, both on the phone line and also, we answer emails and tweets and shit like that. So the door's always open. See y'all soon.
See you, folks. Peace.